tonight, I'd like to give you, provide a voice for someone who is a little challenged, I think, to really get his voice out. His name is Stanley Cohen. He's a lawyer. He's a human rights activist. On his own website, he says, an advocate for many people the government would like to silence or put in jail, unquote. And in fact, the government is trying to sentence and silence Cohen. They sentenced Stanley Cohen to 18 months in prison on tax charges that he says are politically motivated. And according to Wiki, Stanley Cohen accepted a plea agreement with the government. I don't know how much time he's been reduced by, but he is serving time at a U.S. federal prison in Pennsylvania. Meanwhile, Stanley has done a lot of work, as he says, as an advocate for many people the government would like to silence or put in jail. He has represented hackers. He's represented the homeless, Occupy activists, anti-war protesters. He's represented Hamas. He's represented Muslim clerics, Native American activists, supporters of Peru's Shining Path guerrillas. He has represented Anonymous in the PayPal 14 case and many more. And as Cohen is in jail, and I assume harder to get his point of view out there, I want to excerpt an article that he wrote, an opinion piece that he wrote, September 30th, and it appears in Counterpunch, counterpunch.org. It's titled, quote, Israel and Academic Freedom, a Closed Book, unquote. Cohen believes, as I assume most people do, that the university, college, is intended to be a melting pot where diverse opinions unite in a way that is, I should say maybe unite not in an acceptable uniform thought, but in notions that ideas must be free, must be robust to have healthy debate, whether the ideas are good or bad or are uncomfortable. But that is the way I think the truth is eventually arrived at, by debating, you know, competing ideas. To quote Stanley Cohen, he says, it's not by accident that free speech and association is under attack from coast to coast in ways unseen since the academic purges that targeted largely, quote, radical, unquote, Jews of the 1950s brought to us by a guy named Joseph McCarthy. He too had this notion that good thought must necessarily adhere to a checklist of sanitized ideas, that safe speech and association demanded a line of logic dictated by the powerful and pervasive. Continuing his quote, McCarthy and earlier academic repression destroyed lives, destroyed reputations. More importantly, as a nation, indeed as a people, these purges set us back dramatically, creating a poisoned environment that forced free thinkers to choose between their beliefs and safety. That's going on in many places, in Turkey right now, for example. If there was a common thread among earlier academic tyranny and politically correct academic dogma, it was generally homegrown and imposed. Stanley says today's purity of thought is different. It finds impetus and funding in the global view of Israel, a foreign autocracy which seeks to control the narrative and dialogue of our transcendent young in our own country. That's the words of Stanley Cohen. He then documents Israel's influence on U.S. academics. He goes in detail. He discusses the drive to prevent, quote-unquote, controversial pro-Palestinian academics from college lecterns. He mentions strong-arm tactics used on many campuses, most recently UC Berkeley, banning a course that presents a view of settler colonialism at odds with the Zionist narrative. Cohen asserts that through well-funded pro-Zionist proxies, Israel seeks to fundamentally redesign university debate to promote and suit its own geopolitical needs and interests. And recently, well-funded organizations such as the Amcha Initiative and the Canary Mission have intimidated university administrators and faculty, including UC Berkeley, in an effort to punish what they call anti-Semitism in the classroom. In the name of acceptable academic freedom, these groups promote an Israeli view of free speech, one where, these are the words of Stanley Cohen, one where diversity of thought is under constant attack in the classrooms and the streets in an effort to silence Palestinian dissidents and their supporters by one means or another. He also details how Israel has targeted with often deadly assaults upon institutions of learning and their students throughout the occupied territories. He uses the 51-day war on Gaza in the summer of 2014 as an example, which destroyed 26 primary and secondary schools, damaged another 122, including 17 belonging to the UN, the UNRWA schools. Of Gaza's 407 kindergartens, 133 were damaged, 11 were totally destroyed. 4 universities sustained significant damage from Israeli bombing. And according to Cohen, in one deliberate attack upon the North Gaza branch of Al-Quds University, 22 students were killed. He believes that 9 academic and administrative staff of higher education institutions were killed, and 421 college students were killed, over 1,100 injured, and I'll add that 551 children were killed during that 51-day war. Quoting Stanley Cohen, Israel views Palestinian education not as a fundamental right, but a political impediment. Unquote. Even where Palestinian education is permitted without threat of physical assault necessarily, Israeli censorship of Palestinian schools is a reality. And according to Cohen, is a transparent effort to rewrite history. For example, all pictures of Palestinian flags are removed from textbooks. All mention of the Nakba, the catastrophe of 1948, which resulted in 750,000 people cleansed from Palestine, and there's debate on the number of killed, maybe around 13,000. All mention of the Nakba and the right of return has been expunged from textbooks. Recently, Israel's education ministry disqualified a novel that describes a love story between an Israeli woman and a Palestinian man from use by high schools around the country. And the Tel Aviv Museum of Art, which is the strongest art museum in the country, recently canceled an exhibition of works by the Chinese artist and dissident Ai Weiwei, which was also going to feature portraits of thousands of Palestinian refugees and refugee camps by Israeli photographer Mickey Kratzman. Cohen concludes with this quote, "Free and robust speech as the best vehicle for knowledge is the best vehicle for knowledge and change." Ironically, one of the most eloquent explanations of the First Amendment's critical role in the search for truth was penned by none other than a Zionist, Justice Louis Brandeis. And to quote Justice Brandeis, I'll excerpt, "Freedom to think as you will and to speak as you think are means indispensable to the discovery and spread of political truth, that without free speech and assembly, discussion would be futile, public discussion is a political duty. It is hazardous to discourage thought, hope, and imagination. Fear breeds repression, and repression breeds hate. And that hate menaces stable government. That the path of safety lies in the opportunity to discuss freely supposed grievances and proposed remedies, recognizing the occasional tyrannies of governing majorities. The United States amended the Constitution so that free speech and assembly should be guaranteed. The words of Justice Brandeis. The whole article is linked both at the Tangents playlist and at tangents.com. I want to take a couple of moments before we play the music to talk about my aunt, Thelma, who is in hospice, 98 years old. She is, my favorite aunt. My whole life, I've been very close to her. My mother's best friend was Thelma. And a couple of weeks ago, she had some problems breathing. They didn't think it was a big deal. They gave her a nebulizer, but it turned out to be a big deal. And she was tired. This is someone whose mind was at 100% capacity, but her body was failing her. She was the go-to person at 98 years old for anything that happened in the past. I would ask about my childhood. I would ask about my mother. I would ask about anything. And she knew it all, and still does. I mean, she can hear right now. She just can't speak. And I'll tell you something else. There was no bigger fan of Trader Joe's. I always thought if Trader Joe's did TV commercials and my Aunt Thelma was on the TV, Trader Joe's would just, it would be mobbed forever for the rest of the universe. I mean, she was so taken with Trader Joe's that they gave her bouquets of flowers when she was wheeled into Trader Joe's. And then when she was too weak to go to Trader Joe's, they would give the flowers to her son to give to her. And I mean, say what you will about what they, you know, the food at Trader Joe's, the people are amazing. I love the food, but the people, wherever you go at a Trader Joe's, they're so genuinely compassionate that when they heard Thelma was in hospice, they actually, the person that was given the flowers broke down and cried. Up until a couple of weeks ago, my Aunt Thelma was reading one book a week. Her husband died a long time ago. He was a cantor. And I want to play this for my Aunt Thelma. This is a piece of music conceived by, an album conceived by Wally Brill. This particular track, you'll recognize the didgeridoo of Stephen Kent, and the voice is cantor Ben Zion Kapov Kagan. It's from the CD called The Covenant. It's for my Aunt Thelma. A 91.7 Tangents.
Yeah.
Wally Brill and the Covenant, Stephen Kent on didgeridoo, and the beautiful vocals of cantor Ben Zion Kapov Kagan. And that was Kiddush Le Shabbat from my dear Aunt Thelma, who is under hospice care in her home, in her home. Any of us, I think, would want to pass on in the comfort of our own bed, in our own home. And Aunt Thelma can still hear. She can still hear me. Her spirit is mighty. And she will always, always, that spirit will always comfort me and her family. I love Aunt Thelma so very much.